Having a child is one of the most joyful moments for parents. However, the expenses that come with taking care of a child are rising. This, as families are struggling with the decisions of when to have children, whether or not to have more than one child, or even if they can afford to have children at all. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're delving into the various factors contributing to the increased financial burdens on families and the rising cost of childcare. The cost of childcare has risen so high in recent years that some parents can't afford to work. Now, this might sound a little backwards because if you don't work, how do you afford to take care of your child? Well, in 2023, the average household spent more than $700 a month on childcare, up 32% from 2019. Childcare, whether in the form of daycare centers, preschools, or in-home care, is a vital service that allows parents to work while ensuring the well-being and development of their children. However, the costs associated with these services have risen dramatically in recent years, outpacing inflation and wage growth. Roughly two-thirds of families who need childcare already dedicate more than 20% of their annual household income towards paying for it. In the UK, families could spend a whopping 75% of their monthly income on childcare, which then discourages women from going back to work. The landscape of childcare is also changing, with more families moving away from the traditional reliance on grandparents to an increasing preference for early education programs. Childcare was once primarily a family affair, often handled by grandparents. Families leaned on the support and experience of grandparents, creating a strong intergenerational bond. But today, we're witnessing a growing trend where families are choosing early education programs such as the Montessori method over traditional support systems. Now, one key driver of this shift is the rising desire among parents for early education opportunities for their children. The understanding of the critical development years has led to an increased emphasis on formalized early education programs. Parents are now seeking these programs to provide a solid foundation for their cognitive and social development, setting the stage for future academic success. Childcare is the largest financial component of raising a kid, with national estimates coming in at around $11,752 per year. Unfortunately, not every family can afford the higher costs associated with these childcare programs. So instead of working, one parent often leaves the workforce in order to look after the children. The U.S. economy loses an estimated $122 billion a year when parents leave work or reduce their hours to stay home with young children. However, there are many countries where childcare is subsidized. In Germany and Austria, parents benefit from free or highly subsidized public childcare. Luxembourg, Iceland, Sweden, and Norway also rank very high on childcare provisions among high-income countries. Meanwhile, Slovakia, the US, Cyprus, Switzerland, and Australia rank the lowest. The lack of affordable childcare is also a key barrier for parents, compounding socioeconomic inequalities within countries. In high-income households, nearly half of children under 3 years old attend early childhood education and care. And now joining us today is Dr. Reba Perry-Ufeli, founder of Youth of the Rise Early Education Center. Now, Dr. Reba, how do families budget having a child? Are most parents financially prepared for the extra burden?
The average parent really is not. And the reason why I say that is because by the time you add in formula, we supply food, we supply formula, we also get diapers donated by NYPD, we also get supplies, from books to toys. So we kind of take the burden off the family as well, because we know most of our families are struggling financially, because in New York State, it's very difficult. If your rent is $3,000 and you only make it $3,900, how are you able to support childcare? So that's why our governor came up with the supplement.
Are there common misconceptions about the costs associated with raising children that you often encounter?
Yes. Children are financially a lot for an average person. So imagine being a single person raising a child and not being able to come up with the financial part. So I think a lot of us have an action plan in place, but we just can't pursue it because of the high cost of living. So most people really can't keep up with the childcare increase. So when they give us these letters and tell us that this year you're going to increase $30 more, it's not even logical. It's not even sensible to ask a family to pay more if they can barely pay what they're paying now. And the cost of living has gone up for so many of us, even the rent, light, and gas. So basically, the reason why the cost of living has gone up because people have different lifestyles now. But with childcare, it's a little different because if the cost of living is going up, that means that we have to provide the parents with good service, but they have to pay more for us to be able to stay open.
And how significant are education-related expenses in the overall cost of raising a child?
It can be very expensive because you have so many things that you have to put in place. Because I am a UFT teacher and I know working inside the school system is totally different from supplies. So if you have one child, you can kind of wing it. But imagine a parent that has 3, 4, and 5 children, especially in the beginning of the year when they give this list of school supplies they expect you to give to each child. And the parent really can't afford it because you'll wind up paying at least $200, and that's just a give or take. So that's another reason why I know it's very challenging for parents to be able to afford even projects that the teachers are requiring them to get. That parent might just not have that extra money to be able to supplement. And I know it's very costly because my children are 27 and 18. And it was a lot of money just to raise them. So now we're in 2024 and we're talking about economic issues, social injustice, and multiple things that could hinder people in certain poverty-stricken areas.
What are the educational advantages of enrolling children in formal early education programs?
Well, a lot of the parents, I have a long waiting list for my particular program because I'm a United Federation teacher. So I'm not a babysitter. I'm not just a child care provider. I actually teach the children. So I do a full day curriculum from ages 6 weeks and up, depending on the child's ability to be able to keep up.
And do structured programs actually contribute to a child's cognitive and social development?
Yes. So a lot of times the children come in, like I said, I have 2 migrant children that came in that weren't speaking English. So we were able to teach the family English as well, but my students also learned Spanish. So it's a cultural thing where a lot of times we think everybody can afford to be in childcare when they really can't. And that's why our governor came up with the childcare stipend where they're able to pay for the services.
What about in cultures where grandparents traditionally play a significant role in raising grandchildren?
I actually have 3 of children in my care that are being raised by the grandparent through the foster care kinship program, which can be a struggle, especially if you're on a fixed income. So that's why I gear the families toward getting supplements to be able to afford the child care.
What benefits are associated with this approach?
It's very important that people stay connected with their immediate family instead of a foster care type of person, because a foster care person can work due diligently to help support you, but immediate family would know your extended family, such as cousins, aunts, or uncles, and they would know your family traditions more than a stranger.
Thank you, Dr. Reba, but please stick around. Dr. Reba Perry-Ufaley will stay with us right after the break. And when we come back, financial responsibilities for parents don't take a break as their children transition into adulthood. We'll have more after the break. While childcare costs usually stop around 3 to 5 years old, the total cost of raising a child does not stop there. Instead of daycare and nannies, those costs will be replaced by extracurriculars, hobbies, and education. Statistics show that the average middle-income family with two children will spend $310,000 to raise a child born in 2015 up to age 17 in 2032. A significant portion of this cost is housing, as families need to upgrade to a larger space to accommodate two growing children. Then comes food. On the low budget end, a family of four spends about $11,700 a year on food at home. On the higher end, they spend more than $19,000 per year on food. And that's around 25% of their income based on the median household income of $74,000. And finally, there's the college education fund. The average annual cost of public colleges is around $24,000, while a private college is at $55,000. Besides, parents will also need to factor in transportation to and from school, healthcare, insurance, clothing, toys, phone bills, extracurricular activities, sports, hobbies, family vacations, and more. The high cost of raising a child is one of the reasons American families are having fewer children. The fertility rate is currently 1.782 births per woman, which measures the number of births the average woman will have during her lifetime. While the cost of having multiple children is high, the cost per child actually goes down the more kids you have. Two kids can live in one bedroom and share items like toys or clothes. Compared to a family with two kids, couples spend 27% more on an only child, and families with three or more kids spend 24% less on each child. South Korea is one of the most expensive countries in the world to raise a child to 18 years old, followed by China. For Koreans, a large sum of childcare expenditure goes towards educational expenses beyond regular public schooling. Koreans spend about $360 each month per child in 2022 on private cram schools so that they can test into good high schools and universities. Korea is a very education-focused society, and for most families, extra lessons after regular school is accepted as normal. Families that cannot afford these extra cram classes oftentimes are at a disadvantage when it comes to the child's future. Most of these extra lessons are focused on English as a second language and math. So for this and more, let's bring in again Dr. Reba Perry-Ufaley, founder of Youth of the Rise Early Education Center. Now, we switch to the financial aspect of childcare. How do you charge parents knowing most of them can't take the burden of high childcare costs?
Well, I basically have never increase my payments. I've been open for 15 years and I stick to the same amount. And this is why I supplement by doing outside of work besides the childcare, because I know my average family cannot afford the $340 that the state regulates for us to charge. That's someone's whole income. So I stick to a lower base. And when I started this 15 years ago, it was to help support people in the community, but it was also to help the children be able to build their self-esteem more than just empowering for the money part.
How do childcare and extracurricular activities contribute to the financial responsibilities of parents?
Well, in my particular program, I bring everything to the children, or I bring them out, because I know most of my parents really cannot afford to go outside their perimeter, meaning they get off of work, they're tired anyway, but most of the time they just can't afford to take their child to amusement park or even to the zoo or any type of structured environment. So we basically do everything. We are a one-stop shop, meaning we give all the supplies, but we also take that burden off the mom. And this is why we have such a long waiting list. We're right now looking to open two more sites because we realize that the parents' needs are bigger than what we thought. Open 15 years, and I see the parents begging to get into this particular site because they know everything will be brought to the child.
Do extracurricular activities help the parents since they can be more flexible with work hours, or the cost benefit of extracurricular activities is just not worth it?
The extracurriculum activity does help the parent because it puts them at ease, especially when I send the photos and say, look, we're here at a merry-go-round. Look, we're at the zoo, or we're visiting Santa Claus, or we're doing some extracurriculum activity, and it's no out-of-pocket expense on their behalf. And the parent is at work not worrying because some of my children stay in my care for 10 to 12 hours. So that means majority of the day they're with me. So by the time the weekend comes, the parent just overwhelmed with just everyday activities such as laundry, cooking, cleaning. So that's why we do the one-stop shop where the mom and dad or grandma doesn't have to worry about the child being cared for.
How do government support programs and policies contribute to alleviating the financial burden of child rearing?
So they have a child care voucher from Administrative Children's Services and different programs, 3K. And what they do is they supplement according to your income, but they also allow the children to be in child care and not have to have that financial burden of worrying, do I pay for the child care or do I pay for my rent? Do I pay for my lights or pay for the child care? And a lot of daycares have actually closed because of COVID. And that means that we're limited on quality child care. So that's why we have such a long waiting list. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go out on faith and actually open another site so that I can be able to address this major issue.
And are there areas where government initiatives could be enhanced to better support families?
I think once a child is enrolled in child care, it shouldn't be the daycare provider telling parents to go and apply for these supplemented child care vouchers. I think it should be automatically sent out to the parent so that the parent can know. And how would they know? Because they do a database and they know exactly how many children are born. And when they do the census, that's the part that should allow parents to be able to address their child care issues without worrying about the child staying with grandma instead of actually being in a child care center or group setting.
How does income disparity influence the choices and opportunities available to families in terms of the quality of life for their children?
Well, disparity part comes in, like I said, the migrant children that I service in my daycare. It's not just me servicing the child, I service the whole family because if the family is not together, it means the child will struggle. So my goal is to help assist the whole family so no one ever lives under poverty. Poverty is something that in America that we all should never have to face because there's too many supplemental programs that can help and assist you.
And are there initiatives aimed at bridging the educational gap for children from lower income families?
Yes, they do have a lot of programs, like I told you, UPK, 3K, and supplemented programs. So if you are from a lower income bracket, that you are able to get the child care vouchers in place without worrying, is my child going to get quality care? And I think every parent, whether you're low income or wealthy, your job and your goal is to educate your children, but be safe at the same time. I actually am on a network where I give advice, and I always tell parents to go by referrals. If there's someone in your network and they have a child care center, most of the children that are in my care are through referrals. Referrals are very important because it allows you not to worry because that prior parent already knows the daycare provider. And do your homework and research. Everything that looks good is not always gold. So always do your research. And everything is in a Google search, and you can look at reviews, and you also can research that particular daycare.
Thank you so much, Dr. Reba, for all your time today. Now, DINK has become a popular term these days. It stands for dual income, no kids for couples who choose to forego kids and the extra expenses to then enjoy their disposable income on themselves. As a result, DINKs are often able to afford extra trips, luxury items, and expensive cars that otherwise would be completely unattainable. Almost half of unmarried Americans want to get married in the future, but only 28% say that they want to have a child. Social media has accelerated this trend as thousands of couples are going viral, sharing their choice to opt out of parenthood. But while they are having fun and winning today, it doesn't always end up paying off in the long run. Because it's important to think about later life and who's going to look after you when you're older. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.